Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 20th of November and we're well and truly into the autumn now. Coincidentally, Jeremy Hunt just this week unveiled the contents of his autumn statement in the House of Commons. Certain things: minimum wage increased, 45% additional rate of income tax will be paid on earnings over 125,000, income tax personal allowance and higher rate thresholds frozen for further 2 years. What else have we got? Household energy price cap extended for 1 year beyond April, but made less generous, with typical bills capped at 3,000 a year. So what do you make of it, Kev? I mean, there's going to be certainly a period of, let's say, austerity come in with a lot of cuts to local councils and funding. So what are your thoughts?
I think my thoughts are it was exactly what everybody was expecting. I mean, we've had the debacle over the last 2-3 months, haven't we? Where basically, let's cut everything and see how we get on.
Do you ever think that you'd go from everything being like rosy and or in terms of people who were the higher earners thinking this is just a dream come true, what they announced in the mini budget? And then now they've done a complete, it couldn't be any more opposite, could it?
No, absolutely. No, I mean, in the matter of 3 months, you've probably changed from saving yourself X number of £1,000 of tax. I mean, if you're earning 200 grand a year, for the sake of argument, you are going to be, £3,500 better off. And now you're going to be significantly worse off. You're probably going to have to pay more than another £1,500 tax. So it's probably changed £5,000 in a few months. And yeah. Believe it or not, one of the biggest tax cuts or biggest tax rises that he did was stopping the amount we can earn before we pay any tax for another number of years. This is like to 2028. This is like we're going to have 6 or 7 years now where it's going to be 12,500 or 12,510, is it, or 20, that you can earn before you pay any tax.
You're talking about income.
This is huge. The income tax.
We haven't even mentioned capital gains tax, which is a massive shocker. Really.
And dividend tax as well. They've reduced dividend tax as well. So that was 5,000 in 2018 that you could have before you paid any tax. It was 2,000 last year and this year, and it's going to be 1,000 and then it's going to disappear, I think. Yes. So dividend tax dividend tax allowance is going to be no longer. Capital gains tax is also gonna, the amount you can have as a capital gain is gonna
12,600, wasn't it, in the current times. But I mean, it's gonna affect people on shares, and people need to understand that. I think if you're making profits over that amount, and it's gonna drop to half, I think, from next year, and then as you say, it'll probably be dropping to something like 2,000, then eventually it'll be completely eradicated. So people really need to be conscious that they need to get it into a stocks and shares ISA or a SIP before they do any trading, don't they? Because there's no, what's the point in trading if you're going to be taxed to the high hilt on it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there are good situations there with the £20,000 a year in ISA, but ISAs and then trading from there. If you've got that opportunity, then go for it. You know, I'm obviously living in a foreign country now and I can't use those allowances. So it's, You need to use them if you get the opportunity, you know, because it's to your benefit.
And there was another massive important announcement this week. 3 months after it stopped broadcasting, the Australian soap Neighbours is being revived for a new series by the streaming giant Amazon. I mean, that is wow factor, isn't it? I mean, Amazon clearly believes that everybody needs good neighbours.
Yeah, well, ever since Kylie left when I was at university, that was it. And that was 30 years ago, 35 years ago. So, yeah, I haven't watched Neighbours in a long time. But, yeah, there's important things in life, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I was in town.
And they're always always having a barbecue in the back garden as well. Do you know anybody else who has a barbecue?
Well, I had an absolutely amazing beef Wellington in town yesterday, and it was one of them where it was just perfect, you know, like pinky red texture. It was just melting the mouth. And I just thought, you know, that from a environmental aspect of things, it's not, you know, the whole ethics around the beef and the growing, the cultivation, even the feedstock. I thought, what if somebody could grow this in a lab? I mean, do we know anybody at all who could help with that?
I don't know. It seems like a bit of a tall ask to ask someone to grow meat from cells.
Today, we're joined by Jeff Baker, non-executive director of BSF Enterprise, and Shay Conan, chief executive of 3D Biotissues. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hi.
Good morning.
It's been a bit of a week for you, gentlemen, hasn't it? We obviously saw the news that the company had reached another milestone in successfully producing three small prototype fillets of cultivated meat. Do you want to just talk us through how significant this news is, please?
Sure, yeah. We've, as we've said previously, we are a tissue engineering company that has a lead on this scaffold-free structuring, so getting cells to create structured tissues that are replicas of their natural tissue. And of course, we've been doing this in amongst other tissues, muscle, with a view to solving some of the critical issues in lab-grown meat, which is the texture and taste.
So Shay, when you say scaffold free, other than being on a building site and seeing scaffolding, tell us just a little bit about what that means and what the other companies are doing as opposed to what you're doing.
Sure. So what everybody else is doing is they're using a scaffold, a material that influences the structure of the final product. So it's a filler. There's different reasons why you'd want to need to have the scaffold, should we say. Sometimes it's to add texture. Mostly it's to add texture to the meat, because otherwise you've just got cells that don't, you know, works well for some of the pâtés, but not really for the meat.
Without the scaffold, it just create like a blob, you mean? It's just like,
yeah,
like globular almost.
Yeah.
But yours doesn't require that. That's basically what you're saying.
Yeah, so these scaffolds are the kind of similar, a lot of them were similar to the scaffolding that they use in plant-based meat alternatives. Mm. So if you've tried any of those, you'll know the texture of them. And arguably, it's not the texture of meat, but a lot of the kind of lab-grown meat companies are using that to gain that texture. And ultimately, we feel that they're not going to be able to reproduce the actual texture of meat using these scaffolds. So our approach, we don't need to use those scaffolds because we, based on 15 years of research, we've developed a way of getting the cells to produce their own scaffold, because there is scaffold in tissues, and but it's all naturally, it's all cell derived. The cells produce this material, and it's not only the amounts of the material, but it's importantly, it's the arrangement of these material elements.
So because of the research that you've carried out over that 15 years, then this simply is a like-for-like cell that you're creating each time, rather than sort of an artificial type cell that needs something to help it. Is that fair?
Well, it's the tissue rather than the cell. Okay, so we use the cells as are other people, but we're using the cells to create that scaffold and therefore create a more realistic structured tissue, something that actually cuts and has a mouthfeel of actual meat as you know it, as we say.
Meat as you know it. Yeah. And that's maybe the other issue, is that this is meat. Yes, this is meat. It's not, nobody's saying that this is going to be a vegetarian type of meat. This is meat.
Yeah, quite right. Yeah, there's no vegetable matter in it. So the announcement was around our kind of using what we'd done before in terms of this scaffold-free approach, and going the next step and putting these smaller tissues together to form a larger tissue, which was these kind of few centimeter size mini steaks type of structure. So that was a big landmark for us, to show that actually what we'd previously done with other tissues, we were able to apply to muscle and therefore meat.
I was just going to add to what Shay was saying and try and give you a layman's indication as to, you know, where we're going. This is really the next generation of cultivated meat. Not many people, only a handful, are trying to do this around the world. Up till this point, it's always been full of scaffold, plant-based material, to be able to give structure to the cultivated meat that's being produced. It's a surprise to a lot of people in the industry that this is happening now so quickly, and that we're being able to lead the way in some groundbreaking, developments for the scaffold-free meat as you know it. And that's the exciting thing about all of this.
So meat as you know it, what are the environmental positives of us doing this, Shay? I mean, what? Why do it? Why not just grow a cow and kill it and eat it?
Well, a big. There's several reasons. The cattle industry, despite their efforts, is still a significant greenhouse gas emitter. It's 25% of total greenhouse gas emission is from livestock production, and of course that's come from us industrializing livestock farming. So if we want to change this, there's not really a lot of options. Either we all go vegetarian, which, you know, is being tried, and but it just doesn't seem to be accepted.
Yeah, give me a steak, please.
Yeah, this is the next best option, is to industrialize meat further, if you like. The industrial production of meat has been going on for many years. I mean, this is a next step in that.
Okay, and I suppose it's less cruel to the animal world, if you like, if you want to be from a positive perspective. We are literally not rearing these cattle in cages and force feeding them huge amounts of food and then killing them, basically. It's a much more humane way of creating meat.
That's absolutely right. The animal welfare issue is certainly a big part of big positive.
Should we also talk about that? Obviously these prototypes would not have been possible had it not been for the 3D BioTissues patented serum-free and animal-free cell booster, this CityMix. So do you want to tell us how important that is in the business as well, in terms of revenues and sort of manufacture of that? Because I believe you're not actually going to be manufacturing these meats. Is that correct?
That's currently the trajectory. What we are doing is manufacturing and selling our supplement, our serum-free supplement, which we call CityMix. And that's being tested around the world in a lot of the lab-grown meat companies. And it does several things. It reduces the cost significantly of serum-free media, which is an expensive attribute at the moment. It also increases cell number, so if you're growing the cells, but also, and this is partly why we designed it initially, it enhances or increases the extracellular matrix, which I haven't mentioned, but this is the scaffold. This is the kind of technical term for the scaffold. These proteins, etc., which sit outside the cells and give the tissue its structure, function, and in cases of lab-grown meat, taste and mouthfeel. So the CityMix significantly enhances the amount of material made in a shorter period of time. So it was really critical for this tissue generation. For others, they also recognize the value in increasing these scaffolding materials, or because these are involved in the ways the cells attach. There's all sorts of things that these scaffolds work, how they work, but also principally the reduction for our customers is the reduction in other expensive elements that go into serum-free media, and the ability to reduce that by a huge amount.
Yeah. So, Jeff, looking at that CityMix, what are the financial situations behind that? Is it good profit margin? Is it going to be high volume product that you'll be able to sell based on what Shay's talking about? It's going to need to be used, obviously, in pretty large quantities to produce this meat, I presume.
Yeah, CityMix and basically the media that it goes into are the core assets that are required to produce cultivated meat. And so you're right, Kevin. As this industry develops, it's going to need millions upon millions of litres of growth agent to be able to incubate the development of the cells of cultivated meat. So at the moment, the serum-free media and the serum media are hundreds of pounds a litre, which is one of the great stumbling blocks for mass production of cultivated meat this industry. So what we need to do is be able to develop a serum-free media that's cheap to the market and in mass production. And we believe that this we can get the costs of this down considerably. Where we are manufacturing this and we will sell it as a concentrate across into other media companies that are producing this for the industry. And but I think once it gets into millions of litres, or even hundreds of thousands of litres, we'd have to contract manufacturer or get other manufacturers to do it. There's a great, incredibly good profit margin at the moment, but that ultimately will over time go down because the price will be driven down by the need to do mass production of cultivated meat.
But obviously, if it's produced in literally millions of litres, as you said, 1 pence a litre would be would still be a lot of money, and you know, a dollar a litre would be wow, you know.
Yeah, it'll never get down to 1p a litre, but it'll get down to something under a pound a litre eventually.
Yeah,
one of the additional benefits of it is that it can be used with anybody else's media, so we're not asking people to completely change their media formulations, or you know, the way it works is chemically inert, so it works with a range of different other media formulations basically, which gives it a much wider, less of a barrier for take up by the other companies.
Yeah, I mean, you've in essence created a meat feed as opposed to a plant feed, you know. So I've just been watering my plants now, and I put a bit of the solution in the water, and I feed my plants because that's the chemicals they need. You've created this to grow meat instead of growing plants. Is that fair?
Yeah, what it would do, I would say, with that analogy, say that the additives you're adding are a pound for a litre. By adding the city mix to that, you would only have to add a tenth or less of that additive to get the same effect. That's how it works. So it enhances.
It exponentially enhances what's already there for the growth. Yeah, which sounds very good. So I asked you earlier, did you get to the stage? I mean, when I listened to other things that you talked about, and also in the obviously the RNS. You talked about the smell of the meat and everything. So to all intents and purposes, to all of you, you were barbecuing this meat or cooking this meat, and it was meat.
Well, it started, we knew, you know, what was in it. It's muscle cells and the material that those muscle cells make that allows it to have its structure. The purpose of this set of experiments was to show that we can create what's called hierarchical structures, so structure upon structure upon structure, because if you tear apart some meat and look at it under a microscope, you'll see very small structures that you don't normally observe as someone eating it, but you start to observe, you can as a human eating meat, you can observe some structures
they're the ones that get bundles. Stuck between your teeth,
man. yeah exactly so we were moving from the micro to the macro in terms of the structuring, and we were confident that it would work, but we had to demonstrate it.
Did you do one sort of rare, one medium, and one well done? I mean, in terms of, because obviously when you cook a steak, you look at, people think it's blood, but I believe it's myoglobin, isn't it, the red stuff that runs out dependent on how you have it. But did it have all those characteristics of a steak where you see the different colors as it cooks?
Yep, there's certainly elements of that, and we're waiting for the big reveal to really go into those details. But it looked very, very appetizing.
And what is it? It's going to be what, sort of early 2023 when you do the larger scale of this?
Well, yeah, that's the plan. Yeah, I mean, it's we're trying to do things that have never been done before, but we're sticking with that timeline. Yeah,
good. Should we also talk about corneas as well? Because I believe, obviously, you've got some technology there. And I read a stat recently that said there's something like 13 million corneas, and that's the number of people waiting for replacement cornea. Do you want to just talk us through that technology as well?
Yeah, sure. It's one we've been working on a while, and in some ways the most advanced. We have the corneal tissues, and we're now working up the clinical translation pathway. We've identified partners, NHS partners, regulatory advisors, and we are currently working with them and putting in grant applications to take it through the process, which is quite time, you know, it takes quite a considerable amount of time, and there's lots of of steps in terms of regulations and things like that. So we've got the plan in place, and we've got the partners we need to do it. So yeah, it's going to take a few years to get that clinical trial, but we've got a strong plan in place to get there.
Yeah, there was also a situation where you were advancing growing leather, was it, as well? Different types of leather? Because, again, it's a cellular structure, I presume.
Yep. So it's skin, of course, which is the skin, the raw ingredient in leather. And yeah, we're you know, looking to partner with some companies around supplying them with the lab grown skin that they can apply and turn into leather. It's of course there are alternative leathers out there, but they, you know, much like these kind of other approaches to meat, they're not quite. Don't quite have those same characteristics.
Okay.
And one of the kind of or a major positive of our approach is that what we're offering is a raw ingredient which the leather makers recognize, and so this is something we can work with and apply, because it's a, you know, leather is an artisanal technique. There's lots of people have got a lot of know-how and years of experience in creating leather in a certain way, which they don't want to lose, and this is a way that we can preserve that skills by just applying a slightly different, the same raw material, but produced in a different way.
Okay. So, Jeff, I mean, we've had a good reaction in the share price this week, obviously doubled from its lows, or more than doubled from its lows because of obviously the potential here. And I think the potential for revenue is huge, especially the city mix scenario. You're gonna make in both situations, aren't you, by patenting the way to do it, and also giving the raw material in the city mix, which is, you know, most people would be happy with one of those in the business, but having both is amazing. But if this company was based in the US, because we're in the UK, Europe, if you like, the valuation's got to be off the scale compared to what it would be here, or what it is here, being £10 million now for this potential you know, looking forward to the future.
Yeah, definitely, Kevin. It's interesting. The FDA only a few days ago has approved one of the cultivated meat companies in the US for its production of cultivated meat, and with all the regulatory approvals given by the FDA for the sale of lab-grown meat. That's created a storm in the US. It hasn't really even got press that much here in the UK, surprisingly. But obviously, a lot of the prices of shares of those companies in the industry over in the US kicked up substantially just on that news. If we were in the US, yeah, our valuation would be a lot different, Kevin, as you know. I think in time, the industry will catch up here in the UK and Europe. The areas in which leading the way in cultivated meat are clearly North America. Asia, surprisingly, although maybe it's not that surprising, given that they struggle with a lot of arable land for, you know, development of meat and meat production over in Asia, especially like a country like Singapore, which is that doesn't have a lot of farmland and imports all its products to sell and eat within the domestic economy. So. You having and being led, Israel is another company that's leading the cultivated meat charge, and there's a lot of interest there to develop cultivated meat for obvious reasons. So yes, the US, I'd like to see the UK market duplicating what's there, but we'll give it time, Kevin.
Okay, so the scenario is next early new year. We're going to be you're going to be testing this with bigger pieces, eating it, and seeing how it all goes.
Yeah, the next milestone is a sort of like a pre-showcase or a larger prototype coming out in the next 2 months, and then after that the showcase where we'll reveal, we'll taste, we'll get you guys up there to dig into a bit of lab grown meat and have a bit of a taste, smell and taste, where, you know, we'll be able to reveal the full-blown showcase meat fillets that'll be available.
We talked earlier and on another podcast share about the type of meat that you can generate. So I presume at this stage we're not quite there yet in terms of saying, okay, I would like my I would like a ribeye, please, instead of a fillet or you know, whatever. Yeah, we're not quite there yet. This is simply we're growing a piece of meat, and then you will be able to specify as you go forward what type of meat you're going to grow.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in terms of kind of fat content and other and visual aspects, certainly, yes. Yeah.
Well, Kev's already so, thinking about what Wagyu more.
Yeah, I want a ribeye Wagyu steak. No.
Yeah, well, we all do.
I presume you're going to be able to produce that level of fat and therefore, you know, the replication of things like Wagyu beef would be possible.
Yeah, in terms of fat content, certainly, yes.
Yeah, whether it has the same flavour. If the cells come from a Wagyu cow, then maybe that would be possible, or is that not the way it works?
Yeah, I mean, there's different, you can layer different things into it in terms of taste and things. There's different ways of approaching taste in the same way that you add salt when you're cooking to enhance flavour. You know, there's it's all part of the process. But we're looking at creating meat as you know it, and
because I mean, if you were to produce a serious amount of A5 Wagyu beef, then the price of A5 Wagyu is gonna be reducing, basically, just like they produce Wagyu in Australia, they produce it in America, but we know it's only in certain places in Japan that it actually exists, and there will always be a market for the real thing, if you like, but there is going to be a replacement market for all of these things, I'm sure, and it's going to be huge.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing I wanted to clarify, Kevin, was that a lot of people are thinking 3D printing is involved in what we're doing. And I just wanted to clarify for the market that there is no 3D printing now, even though we have a name, 3D biotissue. That's to describe the tissues more than anything. The cornea was originally produced as a 3D product in a 3D printing machine, but that's no longer the case. Where developing the cells, and it's creating its own, as Shay said, it's structured tissues through tissue engineering that we're doing, and it's growing in that particular way. It's not printed as a 3D printer.
Yeah. Okay. It's all very interesting, and my mouth is salivating. Even this grown meat, I want to taste it. Is right. So if you need some guinea pigs, I'm there. I'll be there to taste it.
You bet.
Jeff Baker and Shay Collin, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Phil. Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thanks, guys.
Well, it's good. Always good to catch up with Jeff and Shay. Looks like certainly the fortunes of the company are turning around now, doesn't it? Seems like it's a bit of a game changer, and I look forward to them getting the larger pieces of meat done and out and sampled in the future.
That's right. The scientist and the vegetarian. What more can we say?
So what else has been going on? Obviously, we're getting to that time of year now where we're, you know, coming into the Christmas or the festive period. And obviously, we want to do a review of the 12 stocks for the 2022, which were picked, obviously, at the back end of last year, if you remember the series. Where currently, I mean, it's been a pretty tumultuous year on the markets, as we all know. Where do we sit now in terms of overall percentage? And maybe we'll talk about what it got to in terms of the highest above, you know, the highest percentage it rose.
Yeah. There's two ways of looking at this, okay? So the first way would be to turn around and say, you bought all the stocks and you just hold them until now or the end of the year, which would probably be a pretty unwise way of investing ultimately. But if that was the case, you would be 29.1% down on our portfolio. So that wouldn't be a particularly good result. Now, we did specify on our information that we gave targets, and our intention was that when it hit a target, we would sell it, because basically that would be our profit. So if you had followed those rules, there was only two that you would have sold, but you would have sold them obviously at a significant profit, and you would be left with a 3.7% gain for the year, or for the 11 and a half months or whatever it is now that you sit at. So, I mean, overall, considering It's like the old joke, isn't it? Considering what's happened to you, considering this year, to actually say that that's a 3.7% gain. And you could argue with some of the stocks, one of the stocks particularly is suspended. So you could argue if you took the value of that stock away completely, then you'd absolutely be flat. Okay, you would not have made a profit or you would not have made a loss. I have to say, based on my own portfolio, that would be a major result.
I think it just highlights you've got to be agile, haven't you, in this current climate? You know, any profits that you see staring you, you have to take some off the table. There's no other way of investing right now. You know, whether you want to call it investing, trade, however you dress it up, you have to take profits when they're staring you in the face.
I think that's a good place to start, because the most stark one of that is our best performer, which is Cloudbake Discovery. Now, we put a target price of 5.5p on it, having started, I think, around the 1.6 pence for a 200% gain. And effectively, you know, you would have made 200% on that stock. Now, that's at 5.5p. What was the high on the year for?
Well, I think on the intraday was something like 10.5, but I know for a fact that on one day's trading, there were buys going through around about the 13 pence mark.
Yeah, so intraday was 13, but the end of day 10.5.
Yeah.
So I mean, at 10.5, you would have made like 400 or 500% profit. So, you know, again, as you said, being agile is the way to go. Now, what do we think of CDL now, priced at 1.25 pence now at the minute?
Yeah, exactly. It's it offers, and they've kind of changed their a bit of vision, haven't they, into the oil and gas industry, because they've seen the value. Obviously, everybody, we've seen all seen the value in the energy. So, yeah, they're in a much better position. That you know, things are changing there. So, I mean, and it'll be interesting to see whether it does actually remain on the list for next year. You know, again, that list that we'll be compiling for 2023 will be released between Christmas and New Year, as we did last year.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so the second one that hit its target, the second of two, effectively, was Benn's Creek, which our target was 80p, smashed through that 80p. So we would have taken our profit there with 135% profit from, I think, around 35p when we were there. So, again, currently sits at 24p.
Yeah.
But what was the high? What was the yearly high?
107, 108, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you got the absolute peak, 107, 108, end of day 104, I think it was. So you would have made over 200%. You know, you would have made 200% return roughly if you'd managed to get out at the high, which obviously nobody's going to get maybe their whole holding out at that, unless you've only holding a few shares. But again, the issue is, was it a good stock to hold? Yes, it was, but it was only a good stock to hold for so long, and then you had to get out, as we frustratingly found out, because we were tied in.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of them, as you say. And do we think it's going to get back up there? Well, I'd be surprised if it didn't.
Yeah, I think it probably will. But I think a lot is now based upon the price of the metallurgical coal. But again, we're going to be catching up with Adam shortly, I think. It seems to be that the ability to produce a lot more coal is going to be there because of these new seams that they're hitting. So it could be exciting times ahead. Still a few hurdles to overcome, but I fully expect that it's going to escalate again this year. So, I mean, actually, if we were to pick today and Benn's Creek's 24p, it's actually less than it was last year at this same time. And now it has a working mind, producing, selling, et cetera, had none of that stuff last year. So that is just bizarre, isn't it, really, when you think about it?
Yeah, it's amazing how many companies have come a lot further than, you know, than a year ago. Benn probably being one of the perfect example of that. But the share price is a fraction of what it used to. You know, it's probably 60% down on its high of last year, if not more. And you just wonder what you know. We know met coal's come down, but the reality is they're producing now and they weren't then. So yeah, just head scratcher, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And actually, the next one that should be on the list, but I didn't include it because I didn't know what we wanted to stick strictly to the 12 stocks, was that when those two stocks hit their targets, and they hit them at a very similar time, I think, if I remember rightly, we replaced them with two other stocks. And those two other stocks were Blenco Resources and Sovereign Metals. And they have had very different results. But Blenco Resources is roughly double what we 100%. It wouldn't have hit its target, but 100% return. Because I think it was like 7 point something today. And unfortunately, Sovereign Metals has fallen from where we recommended it, though it had a significant high during that period of time as well. So anyway, I digress. The third best performer on the list was, or is, Hydrogen Utopia with 68% return. Again, the high would be much higher than that, probably around the 90% return, I think.
Yeah, it was about 14, wasn't it, the high?
Yeah, I mean, this stock, really, if they get the hydrogen plant up and running and working, could absolutely moon. Of this, there is no doubt. It could go to the moon. The same with Powerhouse Energy as well, I think. Though I rate Hydrogen Utopia in terms of its ability to increase its value better, though PHE has changed its plan now with going 50-50 on these things, so it's not just getting the money from payments, it's actually going to get money from the profit of these DMG units and when they're in play, if you like. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting one looking forward. And do we need the hydrogen? For sure we do. So yeah, Let's hope, for the sake of society, that one actually works out. So what's the next one, Phil?
I don't know. You tell me. You got the list. I'm looking at a different list. I'm looking at the 12. I've got the share pad in front of me. You've got
okay.
The list.
Sorry. I won't ask you that question again. Okay. The fourth best performance is African Pioneer.
Okay.
With 55% currently return.
Which is good. And it got a lot higher, didn't it?
Yeah, it was 100% return or more at one point, but it didn't quite hit its target.
4p was the high I make it. I think just over something like 4.2, 4.3 was paid. So that did well, as you say, but indicative of all stocks, they've gone up and they've drifted back, and they're still doing it. You know, it had a great RNS out a couple of months ago, and it rose again up to the 3.5s, 3.6s, and it sits back down around the 3p mark right now. 2.8, 2.7, always fluctuating. It's just so illiquid, isn't it, that there's these things just move up and down quite a lot.
But since then, we've had a lot of news on the Kalahari copper belt. It is tightly held now as well. There's a few big holders there. A shout out to a wee Northern Irishman who's got a big holding in that as well with his family. You know, I think the potential upside on that is really astronomical.
Yeah. Yeah, because now Cobre are all in the area in Botswana and everything, and obviously with Sandfire there, you've got massive of interest now. It's all peaked interest, isn't it? Everybody's interested. Everyone's sniffing around, and I think they did about 600%, didn't they, in the last 2 or 3 months when they made the announcement that they'd had their results were fantastic. So very much on the radar now of the majors.
The fifth one then is another coal play, and that's Contango. So this is where we move from profit to loss. Now, I did this on Wednesday. So if I'd done it today, Contango would now be in profit based on our figures.
We'll just do them again quickly. take it on today now.
Contango would still be in the same position, okay? That's all that really matters, I suppose, in this particular situation.
So you reckon it's parity, is it?
What do you mean? No, it's slightly in profit. What did Contango finish at today?
So Contango finished today at 6.5.
Okay, it's zero. So 6.5, 6.5 is when we recommended it.
So but it's
look
parity,
at the yeah. Look at the progress that Contango has made. You know, fully funded now to go for the metallurgical coal, and also potentially now has opened up the ability to sell the thermal coal as well, because of the amount of thermal coal that's required in Europe because of what has been happening. So I actually think 2023 is going to be Contango's year. I really do. I think it's going to be a cracking stock for next year.
Just told everyone what's on the list.
No, that doesn't mean it's on the list. There could be 12 other cracking stocks as well, but for me, Contango is going to be a belter next year. It really is. It's going to have revenue. It's got no need for cash. There's no reason why it shouldn't be higher now. And I think it started to move these last few days now from, I think people were paying 6.7, 6.8 today, but year high was 9.8, wasn't it, Phil? I think you said.
Yeah, 9.8.
So again, at one point, you could have been nearly 50% up on that stock and then sold it. But I think the longer play is double digits and much higher. The next one now, and these are now starting to be in negative territory, is Extract Resources with a loss of 33%. What can I say? It's got an absolutely massive resource, massive. It's producing gold every month as well, or every quarter from Mankana, is it?
Manika, yeah.
Manika. And, you know, it's never going to need cash again, or it's unlikely to need cash again. It's like, you know, how? And, I mean, that hit a high of 7p, I think, no? So
yeah, 7.1. So yeah, 7p. So I mean, it is an interesting one. In fact, when we talked to Colin this week on the copper gold special, which I urge everybody to listen to because it was very interesting. He did. I think one of the questions was you asked him, or one of the other panelists asked him, "What's your favorite asset?" to Colin, and he did give two, but he certainly included Racecourse as being, you know, a world class, and the Australian Porphyries as being the real world class assets. So he was referring to the obviously Extract Resources. So it was good to hear him still have that real vote of confidence in it and say, yeah, this is a major world-class asset.
Yeah, and even if it doesn't have 2 million tons of contained copper,
yeah,
and it has 1.5 million or 1.6 or 1.8, that is one huge resource. That is like monstrous.
Yeah.
You know, that's 25 years of a lot of copper every year. So yeah, Extract, if you sold it, if you bought when we said and sold it at the right time, you would also again be 50% up. Okay, the next one, again, now these stocks are now getting significantly worse. We've got Seed Innovations at 50.89% reversal. Now, what have we got to say about this? Basically this year, and three of the stocks in the bottom half are the three stocks that we chose, which are to do with cannabis or CBD or that type of things. They had a horrific year.
Yeah.
I mean, the stocks in this area were just horrendous.
It's kind of taken a beating, hasn't it, the CBD sector, yeah, for sure.
I don't think anybody could have predicted it.
And there's not really any of them. Even the others, you look at Canabo, you look at Cellular Goods, you look at OCTP, you know, everything else in the CBD sector, you cannot say there's one that has gone that's really doing well and has shone. And it's actually even the IPO stuff, like the Cellular Goods that you know, David Beckham was involved with, that's had a horrific time, hasn't it? It went sub 1p, I think, at one point. Yeah. It listed around 5.5, then it flew up to 20p. So they really all have drifted back to the lowest, to their serious lows.
Yeah, and this is an all-time low for Seed Innovations, I'm sure. You know, it's around, I think, the 2.5p mark or something like that. And still got Leap Gaming, hasn't sold it or monetized it, I suppose. And I think that's why it's been dragged down now, because maybe Leap Gaming isn't worth quite as much as everybody hoped, because the gaming industry is also, stock-wise, has taken quite a hit as well. But yeah, these are the same guys who own Leap Gaming, are part of the UFC ownership as well. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I think that one, for me, has very good potential upside. He's got some great stocks in there, Ed, but it's just not its time, is it? It's just not happening now. Okay, so the one, if you would like to use the word disaster in terms of the potentially we can't get our money out of it, is Love Hemp, and that's 57% down,
yeah,
based on the fact that it's been suspended. Can't really say much about it. They had some.
Yeah, no, we don't know what's going on, do we? I mean,
they had some
statements. Obviously, they've paid the fine. That they've said, reassured people that they are trying to get, you know, become unsuspended and resume trading. But we don't know. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Waiting game.
I mean, they had some misdemeanors in the middle of the year in terms of a raise, didn't they? Which hasn't helped politics or all that type of stuff. So that's a bit of a disappointment when obviously your money is tied up and you can't touch it even if you wanted to. I think ultimately the business is still trading and everything's going along, but you know, they're a development business and ultimately they're going to need cash at some point to expand. I mean, they definitely need cash, don't they, to expand for the UFC and all that type of stuff.
Well, that's the double-edged sword they've got now, isn't it? Is the yes, the you know, the share price can't erode any further while they're suspended, which is one blessing, you know, because it was eroding all every week, wasn't it? But at the same time, because you go to you're listed on the markets. The reason you go onto the markets is so you can generate capital. Hence why they're called capital markets. And if you're not listed, you can't be raising. You can't be generating capital. So they're in a bit of a pickle, to be honest.
They are, and I think really they need a knight in shining armor, don't they, to come and save them. To be honest, otherwise I fear for them. I fear. But anyway. Okay, the next one then. So the next one now is 59% down, and that is Mast Energy Developments.
But they've had a good run of late. I mean, you know, taking a
I mean, if I'd done this 2 weeks ago, they would be down about 15 or 20%, because they were up over 6p, and now they're back down to 3p. So you know. Who knows? It's like bananas. We interviewed Peter.
It went out yesterday, so it's all listen to that one by now. Or if you haven't, have a listen. The video has been uploaded as well to YouTube, so you can have a look on the YouTube channel. We'll put a link in the description of the Sunday Roast YouTube channel, so you can start watching the or listening to the podcast. And this one was obviously a video because we did it as a presentation. So Peter was going through the recent company presentation that was released, that was uploaded to the website, and we did a call with him where he literally went through the slides. So very interesting, very nice presentation, very comprehensive, goes through all their assets at the different peaking sites. And I think it from 3p now, it is a bargain to and it's a safe stock because it has got a tangible asset.
Yeah, tangible asset creating revenue. And it was interesting to see his timeline, wasn't it, that sort of this time 12 months, all the ones that they have contracted, the 30 megawatts, should be in production. And that's even with longer lead times now, I think, is, you know, he's been careful in terms of making sure the longer lead times are in place. And it should have 10 to 12 million of revenue, 3.6 million of profit, I presume before tax. But then that profit's all going to be plowed back into the next sites anyway. So there's not really probably going to be even much taxation on this company at this stage because they're just growing. But a company with 3.6 million profit in 12 months from now is currently valued around £6.5 million. That's bananas. You know, I mean, the situation with this type of utility type stock should have a PE of at least 10, at least. And that would value this company at £35 million or £36 million and put the share price at what? Five times what it is today. So like 15p, you know, so again, its time is coming, I'm pretty sure. It's not in a risky sector, and I feel like its time is coming. Okay, moving on to the next one. The next one then, basically the same downside, 59%. Don't really know why, to be honest, considering what's happened. Conroy Gold, 59%, 59.72% downside. No idea why.
No.
They signed a €10 million joint venture, got paid €1 million as well, and with Demir Exports, who are now drilling campaign, and they are not big publicity guys. I think this is the problem, isn't it? It's one of the problems anyway. Both Conroy themselves and also Demir are not shouting from the rooftops. So they're not shouting from the rooftops, but they have, as Professor Conroy says, a gold district here of 45 plus kilometers of gold, and they're going to have several gold mines, you know, and the first one is probably going to be at either Clay Lake or Contibert. And I don't see why this won't happen. There's already a JORC report there of over 500,000 ounces, and it's going to expand now because they've just hit gold on all of the latest drills, and they're basically trying to find out where it is or how far it steps out. so they can understand it. So have you any idea why that's done what it's done? Because it's bizarre.
No, I don't know. I think that the high was for about 45p, wasn't it? I think we said earlier on. So yeah. it dropped back, and then it had another move back up from the sort of, you know, the late teens into the 30s, I remember. And then from there, it's just eroded, and you can buy in now around about the 15 pence mark. So it's crazy value. I think people, it's the lack of, I'm not saying lack of progress, because they are making excellent progress. They you know, they're proving the gold is, you know, moving out. They've moved to the edge of the fields. They've pushed away, and they've proven that it does extend, and they've started going deeper. So in reality terms, the results are actually very good from what we've seen so far. But it's just, is it just the typical impatience? People thinking it's not going to come as quickly as they anticipated? I just don't know. I don't know what it needs for people to kind of wake up to the fact that they've got a joint venture with quite a big big major there.
Anyway, we were speaking with Professor Conroy a week or so ago, I think, and we're going to go over the again end of April, start of May, and the offer is open to all investors. Okay, so if you're an investor in Conroy Gold and you want to go and visit the site, he's going to put on an event in Dublin. You will go and see the site, and you will come with us, basically, and we will have presentation. You'll meet Professor Conroy, the geologists, et cetera, et cetera. So that's an open invitation. You've got to fly yourself there and obviously put yourself up, but everything else will be catered for. So please send us an email, send us a personal message or whatever if you're interested in that, because we'd like to take a group of people over there and show you what's going on. You know, as I say, we've seen it, but you know, come along. And I'm sure a bit of a jolly in Dublin as well, a few Guinnesses, it'd be a good trip. Next one is Curis Minerals. Now this is 64% down. I don't know what to say about this one.
No, it's one that's like some stocks, and we've always talked about it, haven't we, in the past, this kind of like the constantly moving target or the goalpost changing, and you've got to adapt. And there's one thing is that sometimes you get thrown a curveball, and this is one that does feel like it's been a massive curveball thrown, doesn't it? It's like this company just seems to have changed. You know, as soon as Martin and Mike left, the vision of the direction of the company is completely changed. It's a different company now, is the reality, isn't it?
Yeah, and we didn't see that coming at all. It was a bolt from the blue for us. And you know,
we were in America when we got the call. We were just driving. We were like, what? I think we were silent for about 5 minutes, weren't we? While we kind of it sunk in.
Martin rang us, didn't he? And I mean, basically, okay. Let's forget about the reality of what has happened. Effectively, Curis Minerals is now a play on EV metals.
Yeah.
Okay. So don't kid yourself. It's anything else. EV Metals is going to be taking a bigger position in Curis Minerals, as far as I can see. And effectively, they want to use a UK-listed entity to enter Europe, if you like.
Yeah, I think
they're
going to use this as a vehicle. They're going to use Curis Minerals as a vehicle to list on the UK Stock Exchange. That's what it looks like to me. I might be wrong.
Yeah. And I mean, this is all speculation. We don't have any inside information about this or anything else. But looking at it, they've come in. They've pretty much said everything else that's happened is not very good. And, you know, we're going to do this. OK. Obviously, Curis did have bad news in terms of the what was the name of it?
It was the Calavasos license, wasn't it?
The Calavasos licenses were basically
the local environment just said boomed. NATO, wasn't it? Because it's built right on the edge of a NATO site, isn't it?
The army site there, and they basically just said, no, we don't want any mining there, even though actually environmentally and everything else, they would have been cleaning up dumps and all sorts of things. But that wasn't going to happen. But truly on its own, with its extension to Carina Patra, is a mine and a business all by itself, without any shadow of a doubt, in my view. Both for gold and copper. But it is what it is. Okay, so we move on.
It's not NATO, just I want to clear, it was the MOD, the Ministry of Defence.
Yeah, it's Ministry of Defence in Cyprus, yeah. And then the 12th and final stock, the one is Chilbrands, down 84.33%.
And ironically, it just when you didn't think it could fall much more, I mean, it actually fell from the highs when it was it in the pounds?
It's a bit like Ben. It went to 108.
It's been a constant decline, that one. It feels like, what do they need to do? Because the direction of the company, you know, we've met Callum a few times. We've obviously had him on. And it looks like with him at the helm now, it's really focused company. And he's really streamlining things. And he's making, you know, cuts in terms of budgets. And, you know, he's got it all running properly now. And he's making savings there and here and there. And it looks like he's really focused on turning it into a revenue and profitable company.
Yeah, and for a £5 million market cap company now, which, yes, granted, was at £1, it was £220 million market cap company. So it's absolutely bizarre that it's managed to lose that much of a loss. But anyway, that was prior to when we picked it. When we picked it, it was 15p. It did actually go up to 19p. So you could argue you could have made a profit from Chill if you'd got out then. But then there's been an absolute, you know, disaster. I mean, basically the previous management have basically been not communicating, and everyone's been basically believing that the Chill products were being rolled out to 10,000 stores as quickly as possible and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And none of the above was happening. None. Just wasn't happening. So when all that came to fruition, you know, I think people piled out, you know, and as simple as that.
Yeah.
John Story piled out. Oh, have you heard that name before? And it hasn't really recovered. Raised money at 2p is actually, in my view now, sitting as one of the best looking CBD stock businesses because it's got cash, and the revenue should start to increase. The ones that are going to really struggle and probably not make it are the ones that just don't have any cash, unfortunately, in this particular situation. It's not going to mean they're bad businesses. It's just they haven't got the cash to carry on. That's the one thing you can't say about Chill, because Chill has got the cash now and and moving forward. So, yeah, what do they say? You should back the losers sometimes, because they'll eventually become winners again. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's high risk.
That's the same phrase as every dog has its day, almost, isn't it? It's not far.
It is. It is. I mean, it is the worst performer this year. Will it be one of the better performers next year? Who knows? I personally think it will do quite well, but it's high risk stuff. Of that, there is no doubt. So again, to recap, if we offer to everybody and we take off the figure of the suspended money, because we couldn't actually get that money right now, we would be 0.3% up on the portfolio. I haven't done the figures if we took the money out at the highs of all the stock, because that's not really fair. I don't think anybody would be that smart or that clever, you know, to actually do that. But it's obvious from some of these highs that you could have made a better performance, certainly on CDL, Ben, Contango, African Pioneer, Hydrogen Utopia, Extract Resources for sure, Mast for sure, even Keras Minerals was highs of 18p or something like that, I think, for the year, which was much higher than we picked it up. And then it had a bit of a disaster after that. So, yeah, so there you go. We want to be clear and transparent with what we're doing and what we're saying. And, yeah, we're going to have the 12 stocks of Christmas again for obviously 2023's picks, and let's hope we get a much better result. Let's hope the market is much better.
I think in this market it's actually better than I anticipated it to be when I was, you know, reviewing it. So it's, you know, it's been pretty woeful, hasn't it, the last 8 months?
Yeah, it's not a disaster, is it? You know, if you actually came out of it with all the cash that you put in at the start of the year, considering what we've gone through in this particular year, I think that's all right. I think that's actually not a bad result. We'd all like to be 50% up or 100% up, but that in this market, I don't think that's possible, to be honest.
Okay, so let's move on to some of this week's highlights. The one that was really was the performer of the week was Haaland and Wolf Group. Obviously, that it was, it could be described as monumental, as it announced its preferred bidder to build three warships for the Royal Navy, a consortium named Team Resolute, compromising Haaland and Wolf, Navantia UK and BMT, and they're in the final stages of negotiation with the MOD. We alluded to them earlier. Haaland are preparing planning applications to accommodate construction at their Belfast shipyard. And it moved. It felt a bit leaky, didn't it? Because it went from 5.7 one day up to the sort of like 9-10 point, which is, I said to you, I think it's moving. And then the next minute there was the RNS came out, didn't it? Saying that they'd it was intraday, it was like 10 at 10 a.m. saying that they got this tender for
the preferred bidder
in for the 1.6 billion. And it moved about 120, 130. It did had a really good day, didn't it, where it bagged. And then the following day in the morning, they released the 7 a.m. with a bit more meat, an RNS with a bit more meat on the bone, which explained that the money that was going to be coming into them as an investment was going to be to the tune of £77 million. And the cap was like 30 million. So, I don't think there was one person who's not a trader who didn't have a go on Haaland and Wolf that day, is there?
Yeah, I mean, hands up if you owned Haaland and Wolf this last week.
Don't own them anymore.
Yeah, I think it was a trader's dream, wasn't it? That much volume and that. I mean, I'm sure there was people buying, waiting a couple of hours, selling, buying again, you know, because it was going up and down.
I bet Albert traded it 35 times this week.
That's right, yeah. 10% every time, and you've just made 350%. So you made more than just holding it. Yeah, so, but actually brilliant news for Belfast, brilliant news for the UK. I mean, and they've got massive potential. I mean, this gas project that they've got in Island McGee, I mean, if that comes off, which really it should do, it's just people moaning that they don't want it on their doorstep. But it's required. It's required for the safety, the energy security of the UK. So it's required. So, you know, let's get that sorted out. That's going to be in January, High Court thing, which has already been delayed from this month, basically because they didn't get their papers together. So frustration there again on Haaland and Wolf's behalf. But I don't think it'll be the last contract. When I was listening to one of the interviews, he was talking about they've got a 30-year, I think it was the 40 or 50 ships that are either going to be built or refurbished. Not in their book, but in the UK government's look at what's going to be happening in the MOD stuff. And then they've also got the cruise liner ships as well to refurbish them and all that type of stuff. And they've got the wind farms as well. You know, it really could be a massive UK business and producing many, many thousands of jobs all over the UK. I mean, they was talking about in Belfast, it's going to secure at least 2,000 jobs in Haaland and Wolf and associated companies. And that'll make a big difference. They'll be well-paid jobs. I'm pleased,
as you say. And it's also a hot topic, isn't it, and currently with the defence budget, you know, that, you know, it's pretty apparent that the country needs to have its defences because, you know, over the years, they've just dwindled down, haven't they, from a pretty big fleet of warships and destroyers too. But they've not got many really now, have they, in the Navy, the actual fleet. So, it'd be interesting to see how it all pans out. And I think with a market cap of around 41 million finishing on Friday, it's still very much undervalued when you look at £77 million cash coming into the coffers there. So I think it's got legs to move up.
Yeah, I think 2025, it'll be worth several hundred million, you know, and more, I think. Because it should have that type of profit. If you look at some of the prospectus, I think it was, or RNS, I'm not sure, it was talking about the potential revenues over the next number of years, depending on the different contracts they were getting. And, you know, the revenues, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions, you know, in revenue, and obviously a reasonable profit margin. It's a massive scale business. It's hard in some ways to value as well, but it's got to be worth significantly more than it is already, you would imagine.
So there was that was one of the mover of the week, and then obviously the one that unfortunately had a disappointing session on Friday was Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. They announced the results from a drill campaign in South Africa, and unfortunately the Gazania 1 well reached its target depth without encountering hydrocarbons, also known as a duster, and it will now be plugged and abandoned, as you know. So that really got hammered. I mean, it was, I think it lost about 50% of its value. I hate seeing these dusted. That it just shows you how risky these junior oil and gas plays are when it all goes, you know, and it does end in tears, doesn't it, when they find a duster. And it finished up around 19 pence, I think, on Friday session from the highs of around 38, 40 the previous day. So, yeah, not good news, but never nice to see, is it?
No, it's not nice to see at all. Yeah, there wasn't huge news in many things this week. Other than that, I mean, there was some decent news in E-Star Resources, but again, not really the news we want. Just to say that big VMS copper targets have been identified, and they're going to be, four of them are drill ready. Three of them are owned outright by EST. Two others of the five have owned 80-20 in favor of EST and the Kazakhstan government, or a government-owned company. But that looks like it could be a massive find of copper, really massive. You know, there is a copper mine just next door to it that operated during the 1970s. And have a guess what percentage of copper they were digging up.
40%?
25% copper.
Good.
25% copper. I mean, 2% copper now is wow.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean they're going to get 25%, no, obviously. Course. But, you know, if it was 3%, it would be amazing. If it was 5%, it would be out of this world. So it's like, who knows what's going to happen? But really, the results we're waiting for are the gold targets. Should be coming shortly. They want to present them, not all of them at the same time, but I think, you know, the whole target at one go, I think, and there's four of them that they're doing. So that should be pretty news rich in the next 4 to 6 weeks, you would imagine. What else?
Obviously BSF, we've had Jeff on earlier, Jeff and Shane. Yeah. That was a
yeah, that will, was well, crazy. That went off one this week as well, didn't it? You know, 100%.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, isn't it? How many 100% returns in a day have we had in the last wee while?
We've had almost one a day. I mean, Parsley Box did it today, did it on Friday, didn't it? Parsley Box did it on Friday with a... I thought it was a kind of, they were cancelling stocks. It looks like that is a really, is an ailing company that could go into administration any day. And it was a little bit like the trading on MADE, people, punters just going in blind and and it just recovered. It did like 130% within about an hour. So there's still punters, just, I don't know how people, fair enough, some people enjoy it. It's a casino, but. Yeah, we're seeing stocks doing 100%.
No, but there's been stocks going up for very positive reasons.
Yeah.
You know, BSF was a good example. Harland and Wolf. I mean, Harland and Wolf was 5.5p 2 weeks ago, was it?
Yeah.
You know, and it finished at what, 24, 25p? I don't know what exactly it finished. 4x, on Friday.
4 or 5x, doesn't it, in about a week and a half.
Yeah, it finished 22.7, it finished on Friday. But you know, hit the high of 26, I think, 27 at one point. There's one I've been keeping my eye on, and I'm going to put some...
Is this the new one you found?
Yeah, and I'm going to put some information out. It's not new. It's old new with a new name.
Yeah.
You know, President Oil, what was President Oil, Molecular Energies now, been doing a bit of a deep dive in it, looking some information. So I'll put a note out or something about that, or just a thing that shows you... my thoughts on it, but to me, it looks like there's been a seller in the game for the last 2 or 3 months. And if you'd go back to September, the share price was, I think, in excess of £3. It's now £1.50. And now they've got the oil producing in both Louisiana and in Argentina, and a potential drill in Paraguay. So I think, honestly, that is another one that could do very well quite quickly. Because it's very undervalued, very undervalued. I think it hit a low of about 130, 120, maybe even. So it's risen a little bit now. So it's on the upward trend, I think, to 150 or 145 or something. It finished on Friday. But I really think that one's got a good chance. of
I must admit, I read the
significant increase.
I read the RNS when it came out. I think it was on the 14th of November, so it was like midweek. And basically, the release, the Q3 Argentina financial results, which you just alluded to, and I think the turnover was in excess of around 26 million for the, was it the 9 month period?
For 9 months,
yeah. So the profit before tax for the first 9 months of 2022 was $16.9 million, which looks really good when you consider the cap on it is something like, what's the cap? Is around the 20, in the 20s, is it? So 29, 30?
15 million.
Oh, is it 50? Okay. Yeah, so 15 million cap and revenues like that. I mean, what does that
mean? It should be 30. That was a Freudian.
Yeah, I think that was a Freudian, exactly.
The scenario is there's been a seller in the equation. The downside, if you are, you know, the real downside is Argentina and actually getting some of the money out of Argentina. Yep. This is the real deal, you know, if we're going to be completely frank about it. But the reality is the figures for Louisiana, the production figures haven't come out yet. I think when they do come out and people are assured that effectively this business is valued very, you know, I think it could be valued on a PE of less than one at the minute. Based on Argentina. Well, it already is less than one if you assume you can get all the money out of Argentina, which is a big if. But once Louisiana comes it's already producing, but once we get the figures and we know what's happened in Louisiana, then it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Because
I mean, that's just one aspect, because as you say, they've got the greenhouse capital investment and they've also got the Atome investment. And Atome are obviously are a listed company with a valuation of, well, you've got the numbers, but that puts a valuation of the Atome 27% at around 8 million quid. So even that 8 million pounds valuation only allows, if they're 15 million, we're talking about 7 million value attributed to the Argentina, to the greenhouse capital, to the Paraguay assets. Now, the Paraguay
and Louisiana.
And Louisiana. So the planning for the Paraguay exploration well is progressing. Yeah, to positive news as to the rig expected before the end of this month. And then obviously then they can, you know, project a spud date on that well. So it looks like things. The president was run very differently, wasn't it? It feels like it was that things were delayed. It wasn't making much, but it does feel now under the name change. People do it for reasons. I've seen one this week changed its name. Advance Energy changed, and Molecular Energies now seem to be getting things done.
It does, and also I think there's been. I mean, genuinely, I've obviously no factual idea, but I think there's been a seller in the game there. The other thing about the stock is there's only 10.29 million shares in issue, okay, and 90% of those are held by TR1 holders or the CEO, so. That leaves about 1 million shares, so £1.5 million of free float.
Nothing.
So it's really is nothing. So I think 100, 200, 300,000 pounds of buying in this stock.
Yeah, I mean, you can see on the individual buys when it ticks up very quickly, doesn't it? It's this in the fluctuation. So yes, the spread on it is a little bit bigger, around what's like 147 to 153. I think I remember seeing this week, but. Ultimately, that you get that on illiquid stocks, you know, any volume coming in and that spread will very much tighten down. So,
yeah. But for me, I think that could spring back to £3 pretty easily. And the reason why it went to where it did was because Louisiana had a production problem and so did Argentina. They're both being resolved, they're both back on track. And here we are. And the market cap is where it is because of the bad press and someone decided they're out.
Anything else to look forward to next week in the news or on the markets or AGM wise? I don't think there's any. We've got the autumn statement out, which we've kind of been through. I don't want to dwell. It's a bit grim, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's not ideal.
Yeah. If you've got any money, it's grim. If you're on benefits, you're 10% better off. But at the same time, you know, we know everything's getting a hell of a lot more expensive. So
it's going to be a tough winter. I'm not. You know, I'm not going to lie. It's going to be interesting. It's not interesting. That's not the right word. But it's you know, let's see how it all pans out. You know, hopefully the weather won't be too, you know, too cold, and people will have to have the heating on. You know, for long periods of time. You know, and it won't be too much of a you know, of a crunch on their
burden for people.
Burden, yeah, because nobody wants to see people who are already struggling. You know, as you say, you know, fuel's gone up, everything, food's gone up, the inflation rampant. Was it the announced inflation hit 11%, which is the highest it's been in something like 40 years. So none of, you know, yeah. I certainly wouldn't have remembered it being this much. There's a lot of families who will have never seen things like this. So yeah, not good, but let's look onwards and upwards, as you say, and hopefully next week and we see change in the markets as well, because that's long overdue. It seems to be turning.
Yeah, I think it's like an oil tanker at the same time, but it is turning. I think it's an oil tanker that's turning. So yeah, and oil tankers are slow, so it's going to take a while even to turn, I think. But what,
just 3 months ago? It's not the Exxon Valdez.
But three months ago, you wouldn't have even dreamt of 100% return in a day from anything.
No, exactly.
So, yeah. You know, it is changing. It is starting to change. And hopefully it's a waiting game for the stocks that have basically been doing what they said they were going to do. And then, boom, the time will come.
Yeah.
The week ahead, I suppose the only thing I can say is that we're going to visit the sites in Skipton, is it? In Tipton. Wolverhampton for Tipton for technology minerals to see the recycling plants. This is a stock that's massively undervalued in my view. Absolutely ridiculous price for the assets they've got. We did an interview this week with the CEO, so grab a listen to that if you want. But yeah, I mean, absolutely crazy price as far as I'm concerned. It's like it's giving the company away almost. Now, it's because there hasn't been revenues to this point because of the delays in the environmental agency. And they're very, very frustrated. They're pulling their hair up because they can't do anything about it. But they are going to start, I think, as he said in the interview, they've ordered the batteries and they're going to do them manually until this drops. So there's going to be revenue starting, but maybe not significant initially. But as soon as it does start,
yeah,
bang.
Oh, for sure.
You know.
Good. All right. Well, on that note, hope you have a good rest of the weekend and we'll catch up soon.
Yep. Good weekend, everybody.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.